Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. 10 years ago today, a fire erupted at the Station nightclub in West Warwick, Rhode Island. Hundreds of people had packed into the club to see the heavy metal band Great White. The band's tour manager set off a pyrotechnics display on stage, and soon flames engulfed the entire club.
100 people died in the fire. More than 200 others were hospitalized, some with disfiguring burns. We're going to talk about two aspects of the deadly event, including whether or not the American legal system is an adequate place to seek restitution for the absolute terrible loss of loved ones.
But we'll begin with a story about the survivors themselves. Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick brings us this reflection from the people who lived through the deadliest rock concert in American history.
4 times a day, Linda Fisher applies moisturizing lotion to the scars that run from her shoulders to her fingers. She suffered second and third degree burns over 30% of her body in the Station nightclub fire.
I have a hard time with sensing if I'm hot or cold. I can get overheated very quickly and not realize it and be very sick. Or if I'm not paying attention, I can get cold like to the core where I'm shaking because I didn't realize how cold I was because I don't feel the sensation on my arms.
Fisher was one of 462 people who crowded into West Warwick's Station nightclub on February 20th, 2003, to hear the heavy metal rock group Great White. The band had just started its opening song, Desert Moon, when tour manager Dan Beakley set off pyrotechnics on stage. The sparks set fire to highly flammable soundproofing foam that covered the club's ceiling and walls. Paul Bertolo, a Brockton, Massachusetts auto mechanic, remembers the sounds of the dying as he escaped through a window.
It was havoc. The smoke was really intense. A lot of people were screaming. A lot of people were saying, I don't want to die this way.
Some patrons initially thought the fire was part of the act, but as the truth dawned, they made a mad dash for the exits. There were 4 doors, but most people headed towards the front door through which they had entered. The stampede caused a pile of bodies to form from floor to ceiling. Gina Russo, the mother of 2 young sons, found herself in that pile until someone pulled her out.
I'm burned over 40% of my body. The burns on my arms, my back are third-degree burns, and my head was burned fourth degree, so my head burned right to the skull. I'll never have my own hair. I have to wear a wig for the rest of my life. And then my lungs were actually worse than my burns. 3 days after the fire, I was read my last rites because my lungs were shutting down and all my internal organs were shutting down. I'm very blessed to be alive.
News of the fire shot around the world because it had been videotaped. Station nightclub co-owner Jeffrey Derderian was also a reporter at WPRI Channel 12. That night, he had a videographer in the club taping pictures for a story on nightclub safety. Dave Kane, whose 18-year-old son, Nicholas O'Neill, would be the youngest person to die in the fire, rushed to West Warwick when he saw it on the news. Unable to get close to the scene, he went to Rhode Island Hospital, where many of the victims had been taken.
I actually heard somebody in the waiting room at Rhode Island Hospital, this guy saying how many people had died, and I thought this guy was just trying to be important. He was saying that all kinds of people had died and that the whole building was blown down. And he described what actually had been the case, but at the time, we didn't know it. And I just thought this guy was exaggerating.
In the ensuing weeks and months, Rhode Islanders learned there was plenty of blame to go around. The owners of the club, brothers Jeffrey and Michael Derderian, had routinely allowed the use of pyrotechnics without a permit or licensed operator, as required by law. The capacity of the club was 404, but on the night of the fire, nearly 500 people packed in. And West Warwick Fire Marshal Dennis LaRocque told a grand jury he didn't notice the flammable foam covering the walls and ceiling. Rhode Island law required then, and still does, fire-resistant decorations to be used in places of public accommodation. Fire survivor Paul Bertolo says LaRocque should have been prosecuted.
I've always blamed the fire inspector, basically, for not doing their job. If they know that there was stuff in the wall that shouldn't have been there, that's what they do. A lot of people do stupid things and try to save money, but that's why you pay inspectors to do their job.
Burn victim Gina Russo shares the same feeling about Lorac.
If you saw this foam, and I don't know how anyone didn't see it, it was there. It was painted black on the walls. How do you pretend you don't see that? It's amazing to me that these professional people who would have all hold some sort of degree in this all look the other way.
Lorac has since retired on a disability claim and isn't commenting on the 10th anniversary. Attorney John Baralek, who represented many of the victims and went on to write the definitive account of the tragedy in the book Killer Show, says the tragedy was the result of a lot of people not doing their jobs.
Incidents like this, one person doing the right thing can usually avoid the tragedy, whether it be an inspector or someone complying with fireworks ordinances, something like that. In this case, it was, as some have said, a perfect storm. Many small mistakes were made, and they were usually mistakes of omission, usually motivated by profit motive or laziness.
Only two people would go to jail, and not for very long. Band manager Dan Beakley, who set off the fireworks, served 2 years of a 4-year sentence. And club co-owner Michael Derderian served 2 years and 3 months of a 4-year sentence before being paroled for good behavior. Brother Jeffrey Derderian got off with only community service. And neither brother has ever paid a cent of his own money to settle the many claims that emanated from the fire, though they may still be held liable for a $1 million fine for not carrying workers' compensation insurance. Survivors and victims' families ultimately shared in a $176 million settlement from defendants as diverse as Channel 12 and Anheuser-Busch. The fire has also changed survivors' lives. Russo, who lost her fiancé in the blaze but has since married, says she likes her post-fire life better than her pre-fire existence.
I love my life. I'm strong. I'm confident. It hasn't stopped me, that's for sure. It's made me stronger. It's made me want to fight for people who have disabilities.
And through therapy, Linda Fisher has come to accept the burn scars that require frequent moisturizing.
Anytime you're disfigured, it's a choice. You need to decide how you're going to see yourself, because how you see yourself, it does translate through your actions and your how you approach people, how you speak, how you carry yourself, how you dress. I made a choice that I'm going to accept this because, for one, I'm lucky I even have scarred hands and arms. I have friends that are missing those particular parts of their body, and my heart breaks for them.
The site of the fire today is a ragtag collection of weather-worn crosses, balloons, flowers, teddy bears, and burned-out candles. But that's about to change. Last fall, the owner of the land deeded the property over to the Station Fire Memorial Foundation for a permanent park.
One, two, three.
And last Sunday, survivors broke ground on the project.
Yes.
Rhode Island's fire code was strengthened as a result of the fire. Sprinklers became mandatory for all nightclubs that hold more than 150 people. And crowd crisis training is now required of employees in most large commercial establishments. But if there's anything the station fire taught us, it's that laws are only as good as the people enforcing them.
That report by Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick. Now, among the voices you just heard was that of John Baralek. His Providence-based law firm represented many of the victims of the station nightclub fire. He's also author of the book Killer Show, The Station Nightclub Fire, America's Deadliest Rock Concert. He joins us now. Mr. Baralek, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Megan. It's a pleasure to be here.
10 years after this tragic event, I mean, we had just heard Flo Jonick remind us of the fact that that the two Derderian brothers who owned the nightclub spent a little bit of time in jail, and the number of settlements that came out regarding all the businesses associated with this fire. But I'm wondering, you know, with a decade of perspective now, do you think the circle of culpability was broad or wide enough?
Some would suggest that it was not wide enough. I know many of the victims feel that some people were not indicted that perhaps may have been. I'm not a prosecutor, but within the prosecutor's discretion is seeking indictments. And in this case, no indictment was sought against the fire inspector. That may have resulted from an immunity statute that he enjoyed, but I would like to personally have seen him charged and let a judge decide that. And also the lead singer of Great White, who decided to use the illegal pyrotechnics, was never really brought to answer for that.
I ask that question because I think one thing that that I wonder these many years later is, you know, is it possible even within the bounds of the legal system to really hold everyone accountable who deserves to be held accountable with complicated tragedies such as this?
I don't think it's ever possible to achieve a perfect result whereby every culpable party, regardless of their degree, is brought to account. The criminal law requires a certain level of culpability and clarity before one can be threatened with loss of their liberty. And in order to reach that threshold, it has to be pretty clear. So, yes, some of the lesser players whose negligence may have contributed only contributed on the civil side to the damages.
Now, your law firm was one of eight firms that spent, what, 7 years sorting through hundreds of pieces of evidence and testimony in a civil suit that in the end secured more than $170 million to be distributed among the many victims and survivors and family members.
That's correct.
Do you think that that was a fair result? I mean, can we come to any fair result when it comes to loss of life?
Well, no monetary settlement or award can replace a lost life. We'd all like to simply turn back the clock and undo what was done, but that can't be done. So money damages are really all the civil justice system can do. As far as the result achieved in this case, the total of $176 million, I'm proud that the civil justice system at least got some modicum of compensation to the families who lost breadwinners and to those who have to live the rest of their lives disabled and with disfiguring scars.
You know, I wonder, I've been asking you a lot of legal questions, but this has to have been a profoundly, you know, difficult and emotional experience for you as well, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the fire and then working with the victims and family members. How have these past 10 years been for you?
They've been at various times upsetting and very difficult, and at other times surprisingly inspiring and positive. I think you can tell from some of Flojonic's interviews with persons such as Gina Russo and Linda Fisher that persons' lives have been changed, and of course somewhat for the worse, but many somewhat for the better. They've found strength and resolve that they never knew they had. And in that respect, it's been quite a journey to watch the progress of many of my clients.
And finally, as we heard in the end of Flojonic's piece, Flo very accurately, you know, concluded with the thought that laws are only as good as the people enforcing them. And there have been some significant updates to laws and regulations around nightclubs such as the station. But what about that enforcement piece? Do you have confidence that they will be enforced to the level necessary to prevent a future fire like this?
I'd like to think that here and in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, at least, there's a vastly heightened awareness of the hazard such that enforcement on the local level is much better than it was in the past. But, you know, when it comes down to it, we have to be our own best fire marshals when we go to a concert. We can't rely on the others. We have to take certain steps to increase our safety.
Well, John Berlich is an attorney with the Providence-based law firm Wistow, Berlich, Sheehan, and Lovely, and he's also author of the book Killer Show, The Station Nightclub Fire, America's Deadliest Rock Concert. John Berlich, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Meghna.
Stay with us. Up next, in the wake of the Aaron Swartz case and suicide, a special investigative report from WBUR and Mass Lawyers Weekly on U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.